When I was little, I had imaginary friends. I had two imaginary friends, and they were incredibly real, Charla and Chidi. They'll be so happy to know that I'm speaking about them on a podcast. They've grown up with me. When I do experience them now, they are grown up as well. They're very professional, way more professional than I am. Holly Davis Barrero. As a human being, it's easy to define things by their opposites. And I suppose I could say that, well, I'm not this or I'm not that. But I hear this question and I note specifically that this question is not asking me who I am as a person, which would to me inherently ask me to describe my personality. I guess that through the profound gift of empathy, we beings experience such phenomenon as, you know, sadness, grief, joy, all of these things. And so for me, I would say that I am one sparkly edge of the composite of human experience, or beings, period. We really are, as human beings, the felt experience of the universe. Capitalism. Capitalism was my family's religion. I did not grow up with dogma, doctrine, practice, anything. We celebrated Hallmark card company holidays. I didn't know what Christmas meant. I didn't know what Easter meant, other than that I got presents and chocolate. I mean, and there was a rabbit, right? I did not understand anything about religion. I was a dyslexic kid. I am a dyslexic person. And I think that's a superpower for me now. But when I was a kid, my first religious experience in formalized religion was I had a sleepover at my best friend's house, and it was a Saturday night that I slept over, and we went to church the next day, and at youth group, I had to read out loud, and that was terrifying for me. And so reading, not only reading in a circle of other kids and adults that were observing the youth group, but then reading this weird language and weird content that I did not have any familiarity with. And so I would say that was not positive for me, because I jumbled over words, and it just was not pleasant for me. But my first real religious experience was in high school, the first time I took LSD. And so that when I was able to experience my senses in such an altered way, I began to see kind of like the Van Gogh paintings of life, like the trees on fire and that. And just knowing that, and that's really what led me to my own practice with maybe ayahuasca or medicinal psilocybin mushrooms and things like that. But the idea that we do create our own realities, and sometimes it requires us to be out of the collective shared reality in order to have that spiritual experience that gives meaning. I had experiences in my childhood, long before I had ever tried hallucinogenics, that gave me glimpses of it. And there's something so magical about childhood, where we are so open, as we all know, that we can tap into, because the world doesn't make sense yet. And so we can tap into the mystery in a much easier way than once we have gone and done, gotten educated and all of that. We lose the mystery a little bit, because we think that we've got it. So a few things happened in my childhood that I think really led me to being open to the magic and medicine of hallucinogenics. And I think there are probably three things. The first thing is that when I was little, I had imaginary friends. I had two imaginary friends, and they were incredibly real, Charla and Chidi. They'll be so happy to know that I'm speaking about them on a podcast. They've grown up with me. When I do experience them now, they're grown up as well. They're very professional, way more professional than I am. But Charla and Chidi were very real. They would sit at the dinner table with me. They would go everywhere. They were advisors. They were friends. They were protectors. They were adventure buddies with me. And they still are. They're energetically very real to me, palpable. So that was transformative for me. Formative, I should say, formative. What was transformative is that every year when I was like late elementary school, early middle school, my parents would pack me up and we would drive across the country every summer. So two months on the road. And I remember one time, the first time I had a very, very vivid dream was somewhere between Grand Rapids and I don't know, somewhere in South Dakota, I guess. And we were on our way to a place called Wall, South Dakota, where Wall Drug is. So I had a dream, and I woke up after the dream in the middle of the night, and just I felt every cell in my body because I remembered, and it was sensory, right? So I remembered the way this particular person looked walking towards me. And I'm 11 years old. I remember this kid walking towards me. I remembered his yellow shirt. I remembered the wooden steps he was walking down. As soon as he walked past me, I remembered having this, I smelled the wind behind him, and it was strong. It was aromatic. And I woke up and was just simply sort of taken by that deeply sensory experience at that age. Fell back asleep, got up, had breakfast, got in the car, and we went to Wall Drug. And we got out, and I went, and I wanted one of those freaking bumper stickers so badly. And we went into Wall Drug, and I was buying all the little tchotchke shit. And I walked out, and this young man walked past me up the wooden steps in a yellow shirt. And as soon as he passed me, I smelled him, and I knew that that was what it was. And I just was so overtaken in that moment by having the experience that my dream had showed me before I had it. I knew in that moment that the world as I saw it was permeable. And I didn't know how to get there again until I did. Was with my high school sweetheart, and we had actually, I'd done hallucinogenics by then, maybe a few times, and one night, Mikey was my high school sweetheart, and so this is actually after we had graduated. I still lived at home for a little bit before I went off to college. Mikey was already in our college town, and we had talked on the phone, and I just missed him so much. And I had never meditated in my life, but I went to bed, and I remember just breathing. And at one point, I remember that it being like back in the old days when TV remote controls first came out, you could press the button and you'd actually see the static in between stations. You'd switch from 4 to 5 and you'd see like the static come up on the screen and you'd hear the, you know. And so I remember this sort of experience of being in the static and feeling it and hearing it and all of that. And then all of a sudden, I had never been to visit Mikey, but all of a sudden I was sitting on the windowsill in his dorm room, looking down to my right at him, and he was rolled over. And I said, "Hey, Mikey." And he rolled over and looked up at me, and he was like, and we called each other Woody. And he said, "Woody, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I just missed you so much." And we had a brief conversation, and then the next thing I knew, it was morning, and I never felt like I really slept that night, but I remember how real that was. And I called Mikey, and he was like, and the first thing out of his mouth was, "You would not believe the dream I had last night." And it was the experience. And so that possibility to share a reality outside of what is known as reality, those things really were just transformative.
I think that I'm listening to your stories, and I'm just really jealous that you seem to have been introduced and escorted really gently and lovingly through these really, it's like a beautiful awakening, right? To immense possibility.
Yeah.
When I was, you know, in probably a freshman in high school, eighth grade, I had a dream one night, and I was like on this amazing houseboat. It was so beautiful. It was like my family, and we're all having fun, and it's like summer, and there are these like amazingly cute boys there. And it was like, the boys were so cute. You know, I'm like in eighth grade, and so it's like cute boys. Oh, yay. Because you're like so innocent, and it's like so exciting. But I am never going to be around cute boys like that. Like, those boys were like off the hook cute. And so the next year, we went out to visit friends in California and stayed on a houseboat. And I remember sitting, and they had one of the guys had a bunch of friends come to the houseboat. All the families were together. And I remember sitting in my chair and looking at this scene in front of me. And I thought, oh my God, I dreamt this. Like, I dreamt this a year ago. It blew my mind. It shocked me. It scared me because I didn't know what it meant. So I wrote about it in my diary. I don't know what it means. I'm so confused. Like, but this is amazing. And the boys found the diary and they read it. And then they proceeded to make fun of me and mock me for the rest of the trip, that I was crazy and that I didn't know what I was talking about. And I was a child. It became this really ugly experience. You know, I think that's, you know, Concha talks about the sustos, the traumas you have in your life that are stored in your body. That is definitely a trauma. Because
that is one. Yeah. I was shamed.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I think what sucks most about that experience is that in the dream, it was my hopeful, really youthful child self saying, oh my goodness, cute boys. Like, how exciting, all the potential. And then you meet the cute boys and they end up being really cruel, ugly human beings. What does that mean? So something that potentially could have been really magical and powerful in my life became tarnished and diminished. Yeah. And it was suggested that I was crazy. That was also suggested that I was crazy. Yeah. It's interesting to have those experiences and then realize that most people are not. And then it's like, how do you inhabit this world with your singular vision, with your singular ability to live on the edge, see through the thin veil, be authentic without being demolished and destroyed? It seems like you have been able to do that seamlessly. Is that true?
I've been able to do it pretty well. I think part of that is because of the relationship I had with my dad, which was a completely transformative and spiritual experience, just to be in relationship with my dad, to have my relationship with my dad. But he just instilled so much ability, capability, and courage in me that I'm kind of a honey badger a little bit, you know, like I'm going to have my experience. This is my one precious life. I guess there's just some kind of grit that my dad instilled in me. So
I think we should cheers to honey badgers everywhere.
Yeah. Salud. Exactly. Yes. Yep. And so for me, like the experiences that I've had, you know, either, and I've done both. I've done recreational hallucinogenics just to get fucked up. And then I've been in days long rituals using plant medicines, ayahuasca, integrating, going through the ceremony and the ritual of that. And I will say that when there is intentionality to it, I always get more out of it. Being able to be involved in a ritual with maybe a medicine like ayahuasca, I would say especially, where part of the experience is to be in community with beautiful ícaros being sung so that the spirits are welcomed in to dance and play, taking the medicine, being turned completely inside out by vomiting, and then having the experience. I mean, the experience is the whole thing, but the hallucinogenic part of the experience didn't come for me until I vomited and was literally turned inside out. Some of the purposes that I've gone into ceremony for or having in mind have been to talk to my dad to after he died. He died almost 8 years ago. He died in my arms after a couple of weeks in the ICU after developing a nosocomial infection in the hospital after surgery, so that he developed staph. It killed him. But just wanting to stay in connection with my dad. And I do still experience my dad. He's very much present. He's present right now as I'm talking about this. But there's a way that taking the hallucinogenic, taking the medicine, taking the earthly terrestrial plant, that has been profound and informative because I have been able to travel to nebula and stars and meet him on his terms, in his places where it is that he resides now. Just the travel itself, the way that speed and time and distance occur when the medicine is within me and transporting me. There aren't words for me to describe it other than that I have experienced time in its most elemental form, space and time, not being able to be separated. Because of that experience, I have a little different interpretation of dying and death, that I don't want to stop living because I love life, but I'm really curious about death. And I do believe that it's just an energy transformation. You know, speaking about Melodoma Sommet and his experience straddling that space between life and death, which we all do every single day, every single moment we are alive, we are straddling it. But to do it with such an awareness to it or of it and an honoring of it, it creates the sacred that is life and it creates the sacred that is death. And there is no difference between the two of those things. Did you ever read in, she published it in the New York Times, it was Steve Jobs's sister who wrote an obituary for him. And she described at the very end of that, the thing that Steve Jobs said right as he died. He says, "Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, wow." And I know that he dabbled on the edge and, you know, would microdose on the regular. And he knew about the other realms. He was versed in the other realms. He was prepared for his death, I think, in as best he could be, which is probably as well as anyone could be. But I think to have a response like that as death approaches, and that whatever that enveloping sense might be, as life leaves or death enters or life changes, whatever it is, that's exciting. Ooh.
This has been episode 25 of Bite Sized Blessings, the podcast all about the miracles and magic that surround us, if only we open our eyes to them. I'd like to thank Holly Davis Barrero for sharing her stories today, as well as the creators of the music used, Oscar H. Caballero, Music L. Files, Rommel Pro, Alexander Nakarada, Agnes Falmagia, and Sasha End. For complete attribution, please go to the Bite Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to books, music, and individuals I think will lift and inspire you to go out and do great work in the world. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Holly. Be open to the mystery and magic that lives between life and death.